opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Hey, look at that. Jason's on the table tonight. Jason's lacking.
There you go.
Jason's lacking a mic, so we just put him out for entertainment.
Writing buzz.
He's doing the buzz.
There you go. Welcome to Northern California. This is Shasta Live by the Shasta County Chamber.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it
it's
is.
It's a good rainy afternoon.
It is.
Evening.
Finally.
Yeah.
What date is it? It's October
14th.
14th.
Wrong. 13th.
13th. That's fine, too.
Is it the 13th?
It's the 13th.
It is the
13th. Well, the clock says
14. This one says 14. You know what?
We satellite clock. Do not trust satellite clocks.
We need new equipment. We are here for misinformation. Mm-hmm. And you're listening to KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, Shasta Live, Shasta County Chamber, and streaming worldwide at KCNR1460.com.
Worldwide.
Worldwide. Worldwide. Worldwide. Okay. And just so we know, if you hear this all night long, that's because Jason and I are fighting over the mic.
The
and, you know, Jason, he's kind of a little bit of a fame monster, you know.
Well,
and I'm not.
Ever since he won that boxing match, there's a little bit of an aggression thing going. You know. Okay, Shasta County Chamber, one of our pillars. That we
stand for,
want to
support, love,
is the fishing in Shasta County,
and we're very, very, very happily working to.
It's one of those things where I think if you're in it, if you pay attention to the fishing here, you kind of have an idea of what's going on, but maybe even then not all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're not paying attention, I didn't have a clue of how big it is.
Just like the fish.
In Shasta County.
We just can't let that one get away.
The one that got away.
No.
Right?
Yes. Well, it has been. Now we're definitely going to hook it.
But everywhere we've been, there's been one name that's been synonymous with everything.
Right.
It's all the t-shirts, all the caps, all the stuff.
Oh, you're working
right?
on that? You need to go talk to him. You need to go talk to him. What about him? Have you talked to him?
Have you talked to him?
Have you talked to him?
Yes.
Who is that him?
Talking bear. Don't talk to him.
Yes. Yeah. So you want to,
who is him?
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah.
Well, very humbly, my name is Phil Mitsueta from Phil's Propeller Shop. Been in business for 43 years and love the area. One of the reasons why I moved here from Southern California way back when was boating, fishing, the lake, and all the wonderful people that live here.
When did you move up here?
Pardon me?
When did you move up here?
1972.
Right on. Yeah. And where were you born?
I was born in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, wow. Little Rock, okay.
That's a long drive. So, Phil, welcome.
Thank you, Phil.
And introduce yourselves.
My name is Andrew Ramos, and I am the retail manager at Phil's.
Phil, so everybody knows you too.
Ramos.
Yeah. Well, I'd say it kind of comes with the territory. Phil puts me up front and makes me talk to everybody, kind of like today.
But once you get going, do you enjoy it?
I do. I absolutely love it. I've actually been shopping at Phil's for a very long time. And then one day I went to go get a fishing license, and Phil said, "You look familiar. Do you want a job?" And there it kind of went from there.
So how long have you been doing that?
9 or close to 10 years now.
Oh, cool. Congratulations.
Mm. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right on.
And the next?
My name is Todd Cerna, a longtime Shasta County resident and member of the Shasta Cascade Bass Anglers, a longtime bass club here in Shasta County. Been going since 1975, 76, somewhere in there.
Oh, so you're close, right? 72, 75?
Yeah. I've been living here for, I was born here.
Yeah.
So
I've been living here. I was born here.
Yeah. The Bass Club. Yeah, the Bass
went
Club.
Went from a time to inception.
Yeah. Like I said, the Bass Club about 1975 or 76 when it came.
Let me ask, when were you born?
65.
Okay.
1965.
Same here.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm just curious because I wanted like way back machine. Like, what is Shasta County? What did Redding look like in 65? I'm kind of wrapping my head around that again. Nothing.
Nothing. It was small. Yes.
Yeah.
Well, when I moved here in 72, there's only 18,000 people in Redding.
Jeez.
And 18,000 in the county. So,
wow.
Things have changed.
Wow.
I can't remember. There must have been more fish to catch per person at that time.
Well, you know, when I first moved here, you drive around town and everybody had a boat in their garage, it seemed like. But fishing, you know, trout fishing was always good. Bass fishing was kind of on the tougher side because wintertime it was smallmouth fishing and it was kind of tough fishing and we only had largemouth. And they were hard to catch back then. But then when the Shasta Cascade Bass Anglers introduced the spotted bass in 1983,
yeah,
it just changed the whole
climate
of, mm-hmm, of bass fishing on the lake. So. Yeah.
Okay, now as somebody who knows absolutely nothing about fishing except the consuming of it,
he likes it traditionally breaded in the traditional English fish and chip style.
There's nothing wrong with that either. That's good stuff. Yeah.
No, but I'm always fascinated about, like, for me, to get into a new industry and you meet experts in their field and you realize how deep it goes. And so just to be able to peel some of those layers back, it's fascinating, right? So I have 1,000 questions, but the one question I have is, whenever we hear it, when somebody introduces a specific type of fish into the lake, right? So when you introduce a new type of bass, what does that look like? Does that mean you put some?
Well, it was
a girl fish,
yeah,
and a boy fish.
So just the stories that from being in the club that I understand is in the late 70s, early 80s, the bass fishing was getting tough. The largemouth said it was getting tough. And the Shasta Cascade Bass Anglers went to the Department of Fish and Game and wanted to introduce a new species of bass into California and Shasta Lake, and that was the Alabama spot.
Now, in that regard, are they a compatible habitating fish? I mean, so they don't cannibalize each other? They kind of live peacefully in some sense?
In some sense, yes. Okay. Some sense, yes. But Alabama spot is basses very resilient. They're kind of a river fish. They're very, very resilient, and they multiply fast. They spawn a little bit deeper than largemouth bass do, so the fluctuation of the lake don't affect their eggs as much as, like, because largemouth spawn shallower, and
so
the lake drops, the eggs dry up, and so it was a long process of fishing game, and I think it was if I'm remembering right, it was like 500 spotted bass they put in the lake in 1983, and it was some 5-pound or some bigger ones in that lake at that time. And now there's just millions and millions of fish in that lake.
So you put 500 in, and then you just, like...
And you get 10 million more out.
That's
a good return.
There's so many fish in that lake.
Can you name the species? I mean, is it like...
Yeah, there's a largemouth.
Uh-huh.
There's a spotted bass, and
uh-huh,
there's a smallmouth.
Okay.
That's in the lake.
Uh-huh.
There's a cross, the mean mouth, right?
Yeah.
And that is a cross between large and
large
spotted?
Large and smallmouth.
Smallmouth. Okay.
Spotted bass.
Spotted bass.
So did they do that?
They will.
They did that, like, on their own?
On their own, yes. Uh-huh. They will do it on their own.
It was a romantic dinner evening.
Yes. Yes.
It's not an overcommon thing, but they're out there.
There's a few, them. Yes. Yeah.
Because they spawn at different depths, technically. Yeah. Smallmouth, they spawn at shallow depth, just like a largemouth, you know, around 9 feet. But once in a while, they get a little depth confusion, you know.
So, Phil, when did you actually start fishing? And was it like an immediate, okay, I'm hooked? Or
well, you know, being Japanese, we always fished when I was a kid, you know. I mean, way back when we got out of internment camp, you know, my family moved to Colorado, and then they farmed and whatever. So I started fishing in the rivers when I was a little kid, you know. 6-7 years old. And then when I moved up here, I did a little bass fishing, not a lot. Did mostly trout, salmon, and what have you. And then I kind of transitioned more into the bass fishing as time went on when I was here. So, I ended up joining the club way back when. And that was basically before I started my business. And I learned a lot about it. And I worked at one of the boat boat shops here when they first started bringing bass boats into town. So that's when I got the bug, and I want to start. That's when I became a bass fisherman, and kind of been there ever since. You know, I mean, I don't do trout and steelhead very often, but I still like doing it if I get the opportunity. Salmon, if I get the opportunity, but I'm pretty much destined to be just a bass fisherman now.
But so, didn't you just start as a prop shop, fixing props first, right?
Yeah, well, my initial business was doing boat propellers. I was always into performance boating, you know. I like fast cars, I like fast boats and all that kind of stuff. So I started developing different kinds of boat that went really fast. That was one of the first things. And I had one of the first boats that went over 100 miles an hour and a quarter with a stern drive on it. And then nobody ever heard of that before. And then I built my first bass boat. Was a pickle fork bass boat.
Pickle fork bass boat.
What a sight, huh?
And it had a 200 Merc on it. And that boat went about 85 miles an hour when the average bass boat then was going like 55. So, but it was kind of a big deal to build up my name. And then we got involved in Merle Haggard and Merle Haggard tournaments, and I've got pictures of Merle Haggard, you know, wearing my hat. And I fished a bass tournament with Merle Haggard's father-in-law way back in the 80s. Wow. And so I got a lot of history going back a long way. So Merle was a big supporter of bass fishing, too. He was a great guy. Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm.
He loved the outdoors.
He did.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay, so I've noticed, you know, when we go to the tournaments, you know, the boats, they putt-putt out, and then all of a sudden they get a lot of gas. Is that so you can, like, is there a specific spot they want to get to as quick as possible?
Some people, yeah, there's they'll pre-fish and they'll have their spots, they call it. And yeah, we go by and do a live well check. And
couldn't some of them
I was
going
to say, yeah. Yeah. There's no harpoon throwing.
Oh, yeah. No. And they all go, you know, it's like I have a friend of mine as a sheriff, Shasta County Sheriff on the lake, and he says, you know, we don't bother bass fishermen because they know they're going to go 90 miles an hour till they want to go and they're going to stop and fish.
Yeah.
And that's what it does. Exactly. We can't catch fish doing 90.
So when the one who does 90 gets there 2 minutes before the one
that does 70. Yeah. Yes. Basically, okay. Yes.
Okay. And then do they typically just stay where they're at? And
they could be on a school of fish there, or they could have several spots. They can have four, five, six spots they'll go throughout the day, kind of bouncing around back between spots. Between, like, you know, points or flats or something like that, to because fish move up and down to feed at different. Yeah. You know, they're not going to be there at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock or whatever.
Okay, so here's another dumb question.
No dumb questions here.
No. So, you know, when I learned that there were professional bass fishermen, like professional fishermen, right? Like pros, how do you get into becoming a professional fisherman?
You need your pro card.
Well, and the pros around here just pretty much say I'm a pro.
Oh, is that it?
That's it.
Jason, see? Jason, you could just call yourself a pro.
Yeah.
I could put that on. Mm-hmm. Basically funding. There's guys out there who obviously have really good businesses and do well for themselves, and they're the ones that are going to all these tournaments. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, as long as you pretty much have the backing to do it, you can be a pro going from tournament to tournament. But there's still a handful of guys here that make a living doing it by doing well in tournaments.
Okay, I guess what I'm saying is, like, the pros, are they legitimately better than the non-pros?
Well,
or is it
we can get, like, we can jump into, like, the elite series. That's the top of the line. That's pretty much it. But you gotta qualify to get in there. You gotta go through the minor leagues to get through there, major sponsors, and
so there's history and stats and all that kind of leads you into that.
Yes,
world.
That's cool.
Well, the real pros end up, which I would consider the real pros, they end up with major sponsors.
Yes,
major tackle manufacturers, boat manufacturers, whatever.
Yeah, they're not paying for boats.
Yeah, so they, and a lot of them are full time, so they actually make a living. Most guys around here would consider to be like semi pros. Mm-hmm. You know, they still have jobs. They don't fish full time.
Right.
I mean, there's a few guys, but
I love
majority
how
of them.
All the systems and sports and things work, right? Like,
yeah,
when you're the pro and you're making all the money, that's when you pay for nothing.
Right. Right. It's not like golf where a golfer, you're a pro and you can't play in amateur events. Mm-hmm. Like fishing, you can fish a pro event or fish a local amateur event. Same thing. It doesn't really matter. So it's a little different.
Okay.
Makes sense?
Yep. No, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. No, I find it. I just find it fascinating.
Yeah.
Okay. So how would you rank the lake, Shasta Lake, fishing as far as the quality of fishing, you know?
You know, I think Shasta Lake in the whole country is like 30, in the top 30, around 30th in the country for fishing. But on the West Coast, for not large fish, like record fish, there are some record fish in Shasta, but they're not caught very often. But for quantity and quality of fish, Shasta's probably the top rank on the West Coast, I would say. I mean, because you can go year round and catch fish, and it's you're going to catch fish. I mean, a novice person don't know about fishing. You can go to Phil's, and Andrew could set him up with a Cinco, a few baits, and go, here, go out there on the bank or go in your boat and throw this on the bottom, and you'll catch fish, and you will.
Yeah, I would say we're definitely in the top rankings for sure because, I mean, if you're just talking bass fishing alone, we've got world-class spotted bass in there. And, again, going back to that topic, when the club introduced the Alabama spots, they have a different – well, we have way different climate over here on the West Coast than they do back there. So these fish have a much larger window to get way bigger. Yeah. And not only that, but we have kokanee trout in there – or kokanee, sorry, not trout, but kokanee. We also have trout. We have king salmon in there. And a very healthy shad population. So that gives them a lot of feed to work and grow. And, man, I mean, if you're looking for some quality spotted bass, this is definitely the lake.
Yeah, definitely. And an Alabama spot also, you know, I think where they come from, a two-pound spotted bass is big. But here you can catch an eight-pounder, nine-pounder easily. They're out there. It's just getting it to bite.
That's a huge difference.
It is.
Normally, the bigger tournaments usually try to get here in January, February, and March, and maybe early April, because there's a lot of places like the Delta, Clear Lake, middle of winter. It's either cold. The fish aren't biting very well. Where Shasta, you can catch fish in the snow year-round. I mean, it's a better fishery all around.
So is it because of the combination of the water and the climate?
Right. Well, you go to really cold water when it's below 50 degrees, around 50 degrees. You know, you go to Clear Lake and they're pretty hard to catch. Or you go to the Delta, but usually the Delta has a lot of mud coming down, you know, a lot of cold water
sediment,
and a lot of
sediment from the
sediment
run,
and what have you.
Winter
but
run,
Shasta... Yeah. That's why we see most of the bigger tournaments all on Shasta in January, February, March. And then we used to have more tournaments in February, in April, but they wanted to get away from catching the spawning fish. So we don't have as many big tournaments in the April months anymore like we used to because we didn't want to pull the fish off the beds.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of hurts the population. Mm-hmm. So January, February,
yes,
and March, that's the most popular time for the bigger tournaments on Shasta.
One of the other sports that we're pursuing to some extent is rodeo. And in California, the rodeo industry is growing. Like, it's growing quickly. Is it the same thing with fishing? What's the fishing industry? Is it growing? Is it contracting?
Well, on the West Coast, it's starting to grow because, you know, we talked about this off air, is that it was hard to get a permit for Shasta Lake. And we won't go into that part, I guess, but it was harder to get a permit. So some like FLW used to come here. They quit coming because it was so hard to get a permit. And they're a huge circuit across the United States. They quit coming. So now some of these other circuits would come here, and they'd kind of come and go. But like you got like Juan Bass comes. We have BAM. Bass Angler Magazine has a circuit on the West Coast. Is growing. It's big. They're giving out the $50,000 prizes to, I think it's six tournaments. Each tournament's getting $50,000 for the winner. So that's huge on the West Coast. You never heard that prize money on the West Coast.
I'm a pro, just so you know.
I'm good. Yeah, I can tell. Yes. I can tell, yeah.
I'm a pro.
A lot of the big circuits got burnt off several years back, you know, because of the demand from the Forest Service and what have you. So they wanted so much money from the tournament to have the tournaments here. They want a percentage of the purse and stuff like that. So they really burned off a lot of the big organizations. And we're still having a hard time getting, like, MLF or FLW or some of the other big tournaments to come back here. It's still kind of like, you know, they got their butt singed with the fire, you know.
Yeah.
And they just coming, you know.
Forest Service wants 3% of any of the proceeds that you make. You got to buy a permit, which is like, you know, $90 or something for a tournament, for an open tournament. And they want 3% of anything that you make.
Is that $90 per Fisher?
No, per tournament.
For the tournament.
Tournament. Okay. Yeah, so like.
That's not
the big deal. The big thing is like.
Yeah.
So the Shasta Cascade Bass Anglers, they've been doing a tournament in Shasta County for 35 years. And we used to raise money for Northern California Special Olympics. It stayed right here in Shasta County. Well, they wanted 3% of whatever we gave to them. So if we gave them $5,000, they wanted 3%. Even though it's going to a charity, they didn't care. So what it did, it made people
gotta
fudge numbers.
Government.
I'd like to say I'm surprised.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in 2025, where we're at, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, so it's tough, you know. It's tough, so...
Is that still the case?
It's still the case.
Is that, like, across the country, quote-unquote, that...
I don't know.
Forest Service lakes.
Forest Service lakes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's not that many Forest Service lakes.
Yes, there's a few.
You go to Clear Lake, that's not a Forest Service lake.
Right.
You go to the Delta, that's not a Forest Service lake.
Shasta Lake.
You go to Oroville, that's a state lake. It's not a Forest Service lake. It's not a U.S. government.
So that's more, sounds like, than at the federal level.
Yes. Right.
Because it was a federal project, the dam created the lake.
Right.
It's a federal land, federal lake. So it's.
But our taxes, you know, we bring all this money into Shasta County in these big tournaments. We're bringing in thousands of dollars in revenue for, you know, food, hotels,
you guys need me to
gas.
Do you guys need me to call Trump?
Yeah, would you? that would probably, he'd probably help.
But like Todd was saying, that's a big deal for our local economy, because not only are you traveling and staying in a motel, you're probably going to go sit down and eat at a restaurant. You're going to come to a local tackle shop like Phil's. And even if you're not coming to Phil's, you're probably shopping or doing something in town.
Well, a lot of it's family. I mean,
right.
In, you know, wives, or husbands, I guess, kids come.
They
go into town and they spend their day where whoever is the fisher is out doing their thing.
So the tournament has to pay 3% of whatever they...
Of the earnings.
The earnings.
Not the earnings. So, like, you know, you pay so much back in prize money, but the 3% is left over of your earnings. You got to pay back to Forest Service.
Okay. I get it. Cool.
So, yeah. So, but, you know, you back to the, you know, the families show up. The families come. The wives. Some wives fish.
Well, so that's what I was asking.
The kids.
Do you think fishing as a whole is growing as far as popularity?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, we get the residual business from that, too. A lot of people come up here. A lot of fishermen come from out of the areas. You know, we get everybody from the western states.
Yeah.
Basically, for the big tournaments. I mean, they come from Washington, Idaho, Arizona, what have you. And then they come up here. They visit the lake, and they go, like, what a wonderful place. I'm going to bring my family. So in the summertime, they bring their family for a week's vacation to rent a houseboat or just come up here to do whatever.
And then they go, my God, it's hotter than hell.
And, so we actually bring in, because summertime is kind of off-season on the fishing tournament circuit, and they bring their families for vacation here. So we bring in a lot of new people into the area that normally may not come because they're not aware of all the rest of the opportunities that we have for recreation here.
And what a great place, too. I mean, I don't know that it is happening, but I would think that it should. If you're coming out for a tournament, how cool would it be to bring family and even extended family and stay on the lake and rent a houseboat?
That does happen.
Because you have a boat to get you from here to there, but, you know.
At 90 miles an hour.
Yeah. you know, how cool is it then that you could just actually stay on the lake and, you know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
Let's take our first break. And then, from what I understand, there's giant sturgeon at the bottom of the lake.
There is.
Big ones, like the big ones. let's take a break and we'll be right back.
Like the winter we spent on Lake Shasta, alone and closer than ever before.
Unique homes, uniquely placed. uniquely yours. Service tailored to your lifestyle. A global network like no other. Exceptional heritage. Pioneering expertise. With an eye for detail, we see what's special. From rare gems to modern masterpieces, every home is one of a kind. Like you. Like us. Discover your one of one.
This is Chad Phillips, owner at Shasta Sotheby's International Realty. Please visit us online at ShastaSIR.com.
Now is a great time to prepare for the upcoming wildfire season. REU and city staff are busy clearing vegetation to mitigate wildfire risk to our power lines, facilities, and the community. You can also prepare by trimming back shrubs and tree branches that are closer than 5 feet from your home. Clear debris from your roof and gutter and clear dead vegetation on your property. For information about tree trimming and proximity to power lines, call 530-224-4356. Please remember, we all need to work together to prevent wildfires in our community.
Talking about the big ones.
Let's talk about the big ones.
Lake Shasta's jaws.
So,
welcome back.
Welcome back, Shasta Live. We're talking fishing. Lots of fishing. Thank you guys for being here.
Yeah.
So
thank you for having us.
We heard some stories last year or the year before about us maintenance divers for Shasta Dam. You know, there's specialized people, specialists that go to the bottom
and
of Shasta
never
Dam.
Never came back.
And some of them apparently came back up and said, "I am never coming back here again."
I've heard stories of fish as big as Volkswagens down at the bottom of Shasta Lake.
Yes.
At the dam.
See, when I was a little
never saw one, but
when I was a little kid, my aunt was. It was they're the size of my Lincoln Continental.
Yes.
Okay. So my question is, how did they get there? Did you bring them in at the same time as the?
I think they're landlocked.
I think they were always there.
River.
Yeah, they were river.
They were trapped in there when they started constructing the dam.
Yeah.
And so those fish that are in there now are still the ones from then. And so now, I mean, they don't have the opportunity to go spawn or do their thing like they used to. So the ones that we have in there are dinosaurs. I mean, they're big. I mean, if you look on Facebook once in a while, you'll see some locals that find them. Like, I believe my buddy Sue, shout out Sue, he actually found one choking. I can't remember if it was on a catfish or a bass itself, but he actually found one floating, removed the fish, and was able to get whatever was out of there and set it back out into the lake. So that was a pretty cool story.
Is there any
story.
Idea how many are down there?
I don't think we have a clue. I wouldn't have a clue.
How many are down there?
Some of the fish they might have seen down there were giant catfish, too.
Yeah, they're there, too. Catfish get huge.
Yeah, because I don't think it was just strictly sturgeon. There was probably a big catfish down there.
At a certain time in the year, you can actually go to Shasta Dam and look at, obviously, the water side. And at some points, when it's breeding time or spawning, they will come to the surface at a certain time of year. And there, you'll go over, you'll see five or six of them, seven of them coming up to the surface, and then they go back down. And they're enormous. I mean, when you're looking from the dam and you look down and they look big, they're monsters.
Yeah, well, I was just curious.
It's truly monsters.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're, quote unquote, illegal to catch, right? Or go find? No, you can catch them.
Catch them.
Oh. You just have to have a lot of line.
Jason?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, you can catch them.
That's incredible.
I think what it is that they're just too big to keep, so a lot of people don't target them like that. But like,
and they're not good to eat, are they?
I would imagine at that size, probably not.
But, you know, the sturgeon, out of the Columbia River, a certain slot size are great to eat.
Are they?
Oh, they're wonderful.
I don't know if we have a slot size on Shasta.
I don't think so.
Because usually it's like between 3 and 6 feet. Is what you can keep.
Yeah.
Over under 3, you can't keep it. Over 6, you can't keep it. Yeah. That's Columbia River.
Get
and
stock,
I think
maybe
down in the lower sack, the green salmon, I mean the green sturgeon.
Sturgeon,
I don't know what the size limit is because I don't fish for them, so I don't know.
Hmm.
So I had a question, though. How do you said that there are salmon in the lake?
Yes. There are, yeah. There's landlocked king salmon.
Oh, he was going to say. So they got locked in once they did it. But do they spawn up the river or up the streams?
No, I don't believe those ones are actually spawning.
Okay.
Those ones are just landlocked as well. So I think those ones are either trucked in or they planted them some time back.
Okay.
I honestly could not tell you because I'm not 100%
sure. But they reproduce in the lake?
I don't know if those ones do or if they're
I wouldn't imagine
in.
Because they need the cold water, don't
I think,
they?
I think so.
They raise them in cages over by the caverns. Stock over there. They have big cages over there.
Oh, do they?
That's where they raise them. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they've also reintroduced the kokanee salmon as well. They're a little bit smaller species, but super fun to catch. And, I mean, I see guys bring them in all the time. I guess they're just an amazing fish to smoke. So that's been a real big thing as of late as well for us.
Huh. I don't know if you're familiar, Phil, if you've read this. It's not a story. It actually happened. But there's a documentary, and I'm sorry that I can't remember what it is. But one of the tribes, the native tribes, and you may know, said that, you know, the story of their ancestors is they got their voice to speak from the salmon. So the salmon gave them, the salmon were the ones that could communicate. And the native said that they got their voice from the salmon gave them their voice. And the trade was that the natives would protect them forever. And that was the trade, right? And then for a long time, salmon populations really dwindled. And the natives created a relationship with the indigenous people over in New Zealand. And so they transferred stock from here over to New Zealand. And the salmon have just absolutely flourished out of control over in New Zealand. I mean, it's just like bounty of harvest. So it's been whatever years it is, 25, 50 years or whatever. And then not too long ago, it's maybe 4 or 5 years ago, the indigenous people, the Maori from New Zealand, came back to Shasta County and brought fish back, new stock for our rivers. And it was an exchange, a cultural exchange. But it was super cool at the documentary of showing the meeting, or some of our people went over there, saw where the fish were, and then they came back, and then the Maoris brought fish back to restock our river or whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not an unheard of thing. I mean, even if you look at our trout, they've taken the trout from the McLeod River, and that fish is everywhere now.
Is it?
Yeah, they've taken them to Australia. I wouldn't be surprised if it was New Zealand, but our trout species have been imported a lot of places.
Yeah, because I guess the water in New Zealand is exactly, I mean, because they have so much, you know, mountain runoff and still there, and the water is pristine and stuff, so the fish just thrive there. But I thought, I'm like, how cool is this?
That's
it's like
cool.
A wild.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, yes.
Okay, so let's say there's some guys sitting around going through a midlife crisis, and they want to get into fishing.
He wants to be a pro.
You come to Phil's.
you go to Phil's.
You go to Phil's, right?
Yeah.
And then so
you say,
they come,
Andrew, they say, I want to be a pro.
They come and see Andrew, and they say, okay, I want to get into fishing. What do I need?
Well, I would ask them first what they want to target. You know, I mean, if they're just trying to get into fishing, that makes life a lot simpler for me, because I'll just say, you want to try out bass fishing. Because bass fishing can be some of the most fun and also the most simple. These guys some guys make it very complicated, and it's really not that complicated. But there are a lot of ways to catch these fish, which is what makes it so much fun. You can use rubber worms, you can use little rubber swim baits, or you can get super fancy and start running these $100-plus swim baits to catch them. You know, I mean, you don't need a fancy boat. You don't need fish finders. You can simply just go out there with a rod and reel and catch and have as much fun as you really want. And that's what's so great about fishing is you can target trout, you can do the crappie fishing, bluegill fishing. I mean, that's what I love about this area so much in general is just there's so much fishing for us. I mean, we got all these mountains, streams, and creeks that just run off into our lakes, and phenomenal trout fishing.
So how much is a semi-decent rod and, you know, just semi-decent kit just to get started?
I mean, a couple $100 will get you more than what you need. But, I mean, bottom dollar, you can get rods and reels for $35 on up. You know, I mean, I've seen guys go out there and have a blast with just a $40 setup, and that's including your little bit of tackle that you need.
And it changes. My son loves to fish, and he has a friend, and they go fishing all the time. But he got a new rod and reel, and I couldn't, for the life of me, figure out how to use his reel. It is nothing like a reel that I remember.
Like, you know, mine is like,
flip it over and cast it and turn it and it clicks back. This thing was like, I don't even know.
Every time I've tried it, you know, the reel line comes back and it ends up in
this
ball or stuff. I'm like,
A bird's nest. That's right,
So I don't even know what this reel is.
Technical term for it.
Bird's nest. And then if they went to Phil's and then they started getting into bass fishing, Shasta Cascade Bass Anglers is a local club here in Shasta County. We fish a tournament every month, between, you know, we go Shasta, Trinity, as some other lakes we go to also, but, you know, a good way to get introduced into competitive fishing. It's a fun, I would say non-stressful way to go meet people and have fun fishing for, you know, a lot of fun.
How about kids?
Kids, you know, like,
Are there any kids programs around here?
There are a couple high school programs for them.
Yeah, there is a few, yeah.
That's been pretty cool. I remember Kevin.
I love that.
Yeah, Kevin Alexander used to actually help with the NorCal High School Bass Fishing Club. They are still around. I've seen a couple of them. The new guy running it came in not too long ago, and he was getting stuff for the last tournament because I think it was like 2 weeks ago they had sign-ups there at Phil's. And they had a bunch of local guys who basically chaperone these kids. If you're a kid and you got a bass boat, good for you. But most of them don't. So they get some guys together.
You find
your
one rich friend.
Yeah. But they get a bunch of guys who have boats, and they put two kids on the boat, and then they do the stereotypical tournament setup and let them fish and get the experience. And, you know, they just have fun and are able to just go out and
I always say kids love to fish. I mean, from my perspective, my kids all love to fish. Their friends all love to fish. And if you can get them when they're little, it's a blast. They catch their first fish. They never forget it, right?
Never forget
Everybody's it. Right. got a picture of their kid standing on a shore somewhere with, you know, buck teeth and missing. And, you know, they're around six and they're holding the line and there's a fish on it. Even though some of them are like on the size of your pinky, I mean, they're just smiling ear to ear.
Okay, you have a tournament you'd like to...
Yeah, we... Shasta Cascade Bass Anglers has been around here since the 70s. This is our 35th annual Fall Classic. We benefit, we used to benefit the Shasta County Special Olympics. The last few years we've been doing the Alyssa Ariza Wings of Angels Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So we raise money for them. It's this Saturday and Sunday. You can sign up at Phil's this week.
All roads lead to Phil's.
Yeah. It's a $170 entry fee. It's a team tournament. Our numbers have been kind of low the last few years, so I'm doing something different this year. We're giving away whoever pre signs up before 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock on Friday. If you sign up, six boats have a chance to win a $100 gift card.
Hmm.
So I get $600 worth of gift cards. I got Phil's gift cards, and I got Pine Grove Valero gas cards to give away. I got $300 gas cards, and I got six $50 gift cards from Phil's. But each boat will get a $50 gift card each. The boats.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Fill her up.
And then this is another thing I'm doing this year to try to get more. If I get 30 boats to pre-sign up, one lucky participant. We'll get their interest fee back.
Okay.
Hmm.
So trying to get people to pre-sign up for this tournament.
And tell our listeners the best way to do that.
The best way to do that is go down to Phil's when they're open, anytime before they open or when they're open, and there's an entry form down there, fill it out, and leave $170 down there. And then we do a pre-tournament check-in Saturday morning starting at 4 a.m. at Phil's Propeller.
So that's one thing I have noticed. That this is definitely an early sport.
Early.
I'm out. You're not this beautiful looking at my face by getting up early in the morning. This is a sleep-in face.
I understand that one there. That's a good one, yeah. Heavenly Donuts supplies donuts for us.
They're great.
Yeah, 4 a.m., that's...
So, yeah, they'll be
hot.
And I have, I make coffee. And if you don't sign up, you can't sign up, pre-sign up, you can sign up the day of, down there at Phil's.
Where do you get your coffee, or what do you do?
You
just make it?
I make it out of the Keurig. I bring a bunch of Keurig coffee down. Just make it right there. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Jason, you got...
We have actually this real quick. Jason was reminding us that Salmon Festival is upon us. Oh, we hear October, the salmon are coming home. Saturday, October 18th at 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. The Coleman Fish Hatchery. Yeah. Free parking and a free admission, it says.
Well, you know, there's a lot of activities going on in Shasta County any given weekend.
Yeah.
So it's tough to not step on somebody else's toes.
The Coleman Fish Hatchery is amazing to look at. I mean, when you go look at the creek and you look like you could walk across it, there's so many fish. Mm-hmm. Right, and they're you can't imagine anymore, and they're this is a slow year or whatever, and you're like, my God, this is slow.
And then back to the Fall Classic, if you want to come in and see the fish weigh in,
that's the fun part.
Yeah, we do it. We start weighing at 3 o'clock both days, Saturday and Sunday, down at the gas dock at Bridge Bay. So you can come watch the guys come in. They start coming at 3:00. They'll come in probably 3 to 4, probably for an hour. Different boats will be coming in. And you can watch weigh in. And
okay, so let me ask this question. Is there anybody that just comes with their head hung low in shame and they pull open their box and there's this little dinky thing on it and they still have to come and weigh it in? And they're just like, wah, wah, wah.
Or do they just drop it in?
Or do they just not come home?
Some will drop them in the lake and not come weigh in. But
I've been there before. I used to fish tournaments for like 25 years. So I've been there before.
Actually, he's coming out of retirement this weekend. He's going to fish this weekend.
Sometimes you just kind of face the music and do it, because it's just part of a participating deal anyway. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not like nobody here is really making a living on our local tournaments, Everybody just does it for fun.
I might just do it for fun and just bring a minnow.
Yeah, we weigh in.
A little minnow.
The best five fish each
day.
Be
all happy about it. So.
Is the awards going to be at Bridge Bay?
The awards will be at Huff's afterwards on Sunday.
So we want to thank Bridge Bay for going out of the way for letting us have our tournaments there.
They
do a wonderful job for everybody. The restaurant Huff's provides us for a place to have the awards and what have you. But they're very accommodating. They've been accommodating for
years.
Years. I mean, probably as far as I can remember, probably.
That's almost like a hand-me-down thing. Right. Like, I'm buying the restaurant. Okay, just so you know, you have to.
But the Forest Service requires us, when we pull a permit for a Forest Service on Shasta Lake, we have to use a private marina to launch out of. We cannot use a public facility. So Bridge Bay is, of course, right on I-5.
Because you know why? Because that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
They do go out of their way. They do.
They go out of their way. The crew at Bridge Bay, they make sure the bathrooms are open in the morning for some of the ladies there, and they go out of their way to help us out. So it's great.
Well, we'll go down there once in a while to the tournament kickoff, right? Mm-hmm. We get there at First light. What are these guys doing? They've already been up for a couple hours getting the boat ready.
I don't know. Jason doesn't look like an early bird.
I mean. So that's dedication right there.
It is a lot of dedication. It is. It's a lot of time. A lot of pre-fishing hours. If you want, a lot of these guys that do good at this, they're spending. I don't know how they do it. They spend a lot of time on the water. That's how you get good.
Yeah.
Learning those fish.
Good. So right now, those that want to go out on the lake and fish for bass, what kind of bait, how deep, or from the, what would you suggest, Andrew?
Well, I mean, right now we're kind of heading into that full-on fall bite transition, so spoons. I can't stress enough. Spoons.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
anything not your household spoons. Not the ones you eat with.
Definitely not, but we're still in that part of the year, too, where you could still catch topwater fish, and who doesn't love to catch topwater fish? You could still catch your bigger ones doing that. I mean, rubber worms, of course, little swim baits, but yeah, I mean, I would focus on the topwater bite and definitely the spoons, and you're going to catch him anywhere from probably...
Explain what a spoon is.
Well, I went to the awards this weekend because we just had a last bass tournament. So they're catching them a lot of different ways. They're spinnerbait bite, topwater, chicken worm jigs, and a lot of fish came very shallow. So what happened is they're basically chasing shad. Shad have all come up. They're all up shallow now. Okay. So that's really the main
attraction. There's a whole science to this.
Well,
so, I mean, that
you
was...
You go out and you stick your finger in your mouth and you hold it up. You feel for the sun and the wind on
that
your finger.
That works sometimes.
And then you go,
that'll work.
Ahead.
Well, I mean, that was my observation.
And you got to... You know, some of the most successful guys fishing, they actually think like a fish, you know. I mean, if you think of it like a logical way, you're probably on the wrong path. You got to look at it from a different...
Let's say, can you pick up a whole bunch of...
A lot of the best fishermen out there are really great hunters.
Oh, yeah, probably, yeah. I mean, similar. Really, I was going to say, could you just bring a big, gigantic bucket of, like, slightly anesthetized shad and then throw them out like chum? Throw them out like chum and attract the
fish?
Well,
the tournaments we fish, there's no live bait.
Oh, okay.
So it's all...
Okay, so you messed up.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm already not a pro anymore. Yeah. I'm a cheater.
Yeah. You just got fined.
Yeah.
Everything is catch and release.
Yeah.
We really promote
catch and release. Yeah, we release all the fish get released. 100% of
so that we were kind of kidding around about that last time. You know, some of those fish, they're like, oh, not again. Yeah. Like the same fish get caught over and over and over.
I think this is the third time I got ripped in the lips.
I think so. Yes, definitely so.
But at least they know they get thrown back mostly, so that's right. So we have a little pond or lake on our ranch, and what I find interesting, it has largemouth bass in it, and it has catfish, and I think maybe that's all that's in there that's ever been stocked. But it's been like that for years, you know, 25, 30 years, and nobody ever fishes it. So, but, and so when B-Robert's talking about bait, I always joke, you know, can you buy baby ducks somewhere when you just tie a noose around the net? Because we have geese.
This is James.
We have geese.
Welcome to the world of James.
Wild geese that there's a little island in the middle, and we'll have geese that will lay eggs and they'll hatch their chicks. And they bring them down into the water.
And they're gone.
And literally, the bass swallow them whole. I mean, these Canadian geese, never get one baby to ever live. They're like gone within 3 days. And I'm like...
So maybe they should start thinking like the fish, too, instead of a bird.
Well, so that's what I was like. They obviously like baby chicks of some kind. Just throw them in with it, you know? It's horrible, but
that's
I didn't
topwater.
Know they eat everything.
They do. Topwater. Well, they have these baits that look like rats. They throw out for topwater, and they'll eat those.
Gosh.
Like a big old rat.
Scary.
Yeah, they eat anything.
Spotted
bass.
Well, maybe there
aggressive.
Should be some that are like little baby chicks.
They do.
Apparently that works.
They do.
You go to the Grange and pick up a box of baby chicks. What are you? Oh, are you going to raise some chicks? No, I'm going fishing.
Well, they get them. They get the little ducks, you know, mergansers and little ducks on Shasta.
Yeah.
You know, the spring.
And literally, it's so aggressive. I mean, like it's literally like it's just like whack, bap, right?
They're
like
gone.
The water just goes whack, and they're gone.
I'm sure they're good eating too.
I know.
Okay. We have a few minutes left. Let's just touch on our favorite topic.
Oh, yes. This is where we switch everything to food.
We switch everything to food.
Speaking of eating chick.
Because we're all about the food. And Jason Redding Buzz, he's the professional restaurant hunter. Any new ones lately?
Osaki. I went to eat at Osaki. I don't know. Have you guys ate there? Osaki,
no.
The sushi place? Anyways, it's over there by Food Max. I went there yesterday, and they just kept on bringing out all this. I should have called you guys up.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You should.
Sorry, David. Anyway, so.
My favorite food.
It's like, I had to tell them, look, I can't eat no more. There's no more to go in the mixer, right? But it was really good.
I've been there once.
Have you been there?
And I spoke to them in Japanese, a little Japanese I knew.
Did you?
And they had no idea what I was talking about.
Because they probably weren't Japanese. I notice a lot of my sushi is not made by traditional Japanese people. The best sushi that I have ever had in Redding used to be owned by a husband and wife that were from Japan, and then they moved back to Japan, and then the sushi's still good, but
it's still great.
The Japanese, they just have it perfected, and it's just incredible.
They had a Kanpai a long time ago, the original.
Kanpai, yes.
Kanpai, that's the original couple from Japan.
Yes, and that's them. Jamie was one of them, and I can't remember what.
I can't remember his wife. It was excellent.
The food was amazing, and they were so friendly.
I have a question for Jason.
Mm.
All this food I see you eating on live, how do you stay so fit?
It's binge and purge.
It's actually, I watch what I eat. I try to, anyways.
No,
you don't. I'm on a chocolate run. I can't get out eating chocolate late at night.
We watch what you eat, too.
Well, I weigh 300 pounds.
Have you guys tried the new place, Sweet Tooth? Have you tried that new place? I just did a shout out. They cut the sugar in half. Right?
Okay.
And so it has less sugar, but it tastes so good. I was like, I am like so hooked on it. They make all these pastries, but the sugar's been reduced, a lot of reduced sugar, but it tastes really good. And that's the Sweet Tooth over there by former Miller's, Lucky Miller's barbecue over there.
And I love how he says they cut the sugar in half as if that's the only thing.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, because carbs don't turn into sugar.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So if you just say it cut it in half, you just lost half the weight.
So what are some of your favorite places to eat?
Some of my favorite places, you know what? Odell's Barbecue.
Very good.
Right next door. They did our
Friday brisket.
Yes, we had our Bass Club annual banquet, and they catered this year, and phenomenal food. Phenomenal. Mm. I love smoked meat. Smoked meat is just phenomenal, and they make some type of what's that green stuff?
That could be anything.
Green beans?
Avocado sauce.
No, it's
salsa?
No, gosh darn it.
Sake?
Now I feel like stupid. Now.
Avocado.
No, it's the
is it a vegetable or meat?
Yeah, it's like a broccoli. They make them.
Green stuff.
They make this broccoli this broccoli salad is phenomenal.
Yeah, it is.
It's phenomenal.
It's the one that's like tossed and it has like nuts and raisins.
And their mac and cheese?
Yep.
You can't say nothing. You're making my mouth water.
I don't know if
that's the point.
You know, it's open for registration and it sells out immediately, but you can buy their Thanksgiving meal and it's unbelievable. They do a smoked pepper turkey that will roll your eyes.
Andrew, what's your favorite places to eat?
Well, I'll be honest with you. Other than my mother-in-law's, because my mother-in-law's food is phenomenal. If I could eat anywhere,
are you trying to score brownie points?
No. I've been married for a while, so no. But that's probably my best, most favorite food is anything at the mother-in-law's. But I would have to say, tough second would be used to be at the Jolly Green Giant Market, right there in the left-hand side. It was the Los Reyes. If you guys are listening, please open up a restaurant. Those were hands down the best tacos in town.
Oh, so they're not serving anymore because it closed?
I don't believe so, but if anybody hears about it, let me know. That was the best food in town, hands down.
Phil, how about you?
Well, I started I was introduced to Jack's. I moved here in 72, so about 1975. I was introduced to Jack's Steakhouse, and I used to go there like at least once a week for years. And one of the places I used to fish a lot of tournaments. So when we had guys come up here for tournaments, and Mike Woodward was the bartender, and he was totally unbelievable. I'd bring bass fishermen in there. They come in here one time and they order drinks. The next time they came in, he had their drinks ready for them.
Oh, wow.
And it could have been like 3 months later.
Yeah.
I mean, it was totally unbelievable. But I have memories of there because a lot of times when I was fishing a tournament, I'd go eat there. I'd do good in the tournament the next day. So kind of like
superstitious.
Yeah. So yeah. I've been going to Jack's for years.
It was all that secondhand smoke and.
The old days.
You can cut the smoke with a knife, right?
You could.
You opened the door and it was
from the ceiling to about waist. It looked like just a thick cloud that you could cut through. And all the workers and waitresses and stuff have been there for like 100 years.
Yeah. Yep. There's still
a
couple of them around. Yeah.
Okay, last minute. Thank you guys for coming on. Phil, where are you? How can people find you?
You can find Shasta Cascade Bass Anglers on Facebook. You can message through our Facebook page. You get a hold of me. I'll respond real quick like.
And Phil's Propeller. Andrew, where can we find you?
3037 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, right in between Oasis and Pine Grove. Just right there after the right-hand side of heading north on I-5.
Well, thank you for coming in.
Thank you
for everything. I know you guys support a lot the local fishing.
Yes. Phil is the supporter of local bass fishing.
And not
local
only that, fishing. But youth programs, high schools, elementaries, anything like that. Phil donates to a lot of their stuff and a lot of sober grads.
That's why I'm poor.
Can't take it with you. Can't take it with you. So, you know, you got a good philosophy.
Thank you guys for coming in.
At least you look like your spirit's happy. You've got your spirit. You look like you have a good, happy spirit.
I've had people tell me I look like Mr. Miyagi.
On that note, we'll see you next week.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.